Blog Talk Radio.
My bad on the chat there. I know it popped up like 5 minutes ago. I was preparing at the last second, talking on Twitter. I'm a mess, but I got a lot of stuff to get to today. We're going to be joined at 5 o'clock by Professor Gad Saad. He is an evolutionary psychologist, I believe. In fact, let me get that right here. He's an evolutionary behavioral scientist. That's the technical title. And he now has a YouTube page. He, of course, has a Twitter feed. He's releasing some videos where he talks about a variety of different issues. Him and I disagree on some stuff, but we agree on many things as well. Today we're going to be largely focusing on our areas of agreement. So we'll be having a great conversation about political correctness and how far has it gone. I think him and I differ maybe a little bit on that, but we're largely in agreement. We have, we'll discuss, you know the video I did where I kept repeatedly saying the word titties? I'm going to discuss that video. Will I say the word titties in front of a professor? Chances are yes, but you're going to have to hang on and see. So we'll discuss that segment I did and feminism versus third wave feminism and all that stuff. So it should be an interesting conversation. But before we get to that, I got a lot of stuff to get to. Foreignpolicy.com has an amazing article about how Saudi Arabia is shaking down the U.S. They're like, oh, really? You're going to do this Iran deal? That's nice. Give us weapons. So they're doing basically the same thing that Netanyahu did. Donald Trump went on the irrelevant Hugh Hewitt radio show, and Hugh Hewitt randomly decided to actually be tough on Donald Trump. So we'll discuss that. Rick Santorum comes out against diversity and a whole bunch of stuff. Good googly moogly. Let's get started, and we'll kick it off here with Saudi Arabia. Foreignpolicy.com is reporting on a new meeting that's scheduled to happen between Saudi Arabia and the U.S. They say the following, quote, Saudi Arabia vehemently opposed the Iran nuclear agreement but failed to stop it. Saudi King Salman will now use a long-delayed White House visit to push President Obama to do more than simply promise to help his nation counter Iran's proxies in the region. Instead, he'll be asking for missile defense systems, helicopters, and new American warships. So what he's basically doing here is pulling the Netanyahu move. And actually, that's not even fair to say, because technically it was Obama and it was the U.S. government that went to Netanyahu and said, if you don't actively oppose this Iran deal, we will give you weapons, and we will give you more money. So it was Obama that proposed it, and Netanyahu said, I don't even really want to take it because I don't want anybody to think under any circumstances that I'm for this deal. So it's the same thing happening now with Saudi Arabia. And Saudi Arabia even goes a step further, and they explain in the article how they're also going to bring up Bashar Assad. And they're going to say, well, maybe we'll be quiet about this Iran deal, but give us money, give us weapons, and we want you to train and equip a rebel force to continue to fight Assad. Now, why is that so incredibly scary? Well, we've discussed this before, but virtually all of the moderate rebels are now out of Syria. The FSA is a shadow of its former self, the Free Syrian Army. Now you basically have al-Nusra Front, which is an al-Qaeda branch, fighting against Assad in Syria, and you have ISIS fighting against Assad in Syria, and just all different groups of jihadists. So the idea that the U.S. should arm and equip and train basically jihadists to fight Assad is fucking mental. But it appears like they're considering this further now because we're buddy-buddy with Saudi Arabia and we don't want to upset them that we dared to get peace in the region with Iran. What a fucking strange world we live in. So they continue here, quote, the visit could pave the way for Saudi Arabia to purchase sophisticated missile defense weaponry and more than $20 billion worth of U.S. patrol ships, drones, maritime planes in an overhaul of its navy. Wow. So here's why I'm really scared of this. You know, they're posing it as if, well, they're really upset about the Iran deal, so they want all these weapons and all this money and stuff, and it's purely for defensive purposes. That's the way they frame it, even in the article on foreignpolicy.com, and foreignpolicy.com does a fantastic job usually. But what I'm afraid of is that what we're doing here is we're arming the government in the region that will create the instability. So it's framed as if, well, Iran obviously is leading to the instability, and we need to give weapons to the Saudis to bring back stability. But I think it's the other way around. I think Iran agreeing to this nuclear deal and, you know, going through with the preliminary agreement and upholding their end of the bargain and all this stuff, I think they're rather committed to having no nuclear program in terms of no nuclear weapons program and getting some money back into their economy when we lift the sanctions. So they're actually committed to that. And any weapons that they do have, they're busy fighting ISIS at the moment. Whereas Saudi Arabia, you know, they've sometimes on purpose armed jihadists. Sometimes there are rogue elements within the Saudi government who, and we know this from various CIA documents that have been released post 9/11, they were funding Al-Qaeda and they were funding other operations like that. So the idea that to stabilize the region, we need to give the Saudis more weapons and more money, that's a terrible idea, and it's not true. And they even admit in the piece, King Salman is going into this like, how can I shake down the U.S.? How can I get the most out of this? So what's incredible is that we live in a world where moving towards peace with Iran makes it so that some other countries in the region get worked up more, they get more weapons, they're more on edge, and they're more likely to launch attacks. And to be clear, it's not just Saudi Arabia. It's not just Israel, who we've spoken about time and time again. It's also, you know, Egypt, not related to this deal necessarily. But whenever we give weapons and money to Egypt, what ends up happening? They end up using it for shitty fucking reasons. We covered how al-Sisi, who's now the president in Egypt, he did a violent crackdown on largely peaceful protesters in the streets. Now, the people in the streets were Muslim Brotherhood. I don't agree with the Muslim Brotherhood. In fact, I totally disagree with them. But they were doing violent crackdowns when they were peacefully protesting, and they were doing it with our weapons and the money that we give them. So this idea of, hey, let's continue to arm people and that'll create more stability, that nothing could be further from the truth. I don't want to be involved in that. Just like I don't want to invade random countries and topple random governments and be this crusading imperialistic power, I also don't want to arm everybody and their mother because it always comes back to haunt us. And I know I keep bringing up this example, but I do it for a reason. Look at Ronald Reagan and the Mujahideen. We gave them weapons, and they fought the Soviet Union with that. At the time, we cheered them on, and then the Mujahideen became the Taliban and became Al-Qaeda, and they ended up fighting us with our own weapons. So let's avoid this. I don't like this road that we're going down. What I would say to Netanyahu, because, you know, actually, again, it's not fair because Obama's offering for Netanyahu, but what I would say for Saudi Arabia here is, blow me. You're getting nothing and you're going to like it. Okay. Now we move on to Donald Trump. Oh no, this early in the show? What the fuck is wrong with me? Donald Trump went on the irrelevant Hugh Hewitt radio show. He's a conservative talker. But he randomly decided to ask real questions to Trump. So this is fun. You can guess how it ended up.
Are you familiar with General Soleimani?
Yes.
go ahead. Give me a little. Go ahead, tell me. He runs the Quds forces.
Yes, okay. Right.
Do you expect
him to... And I think the Kurds, by the way, have been horribly mistreated by us.
The Quds forces. The Iranian Revolutionary Guards Quds
yes.
forces, the bad
yes.
guys.
Right.
Do you expect his behavior to change as a result?
I thought you said Kurds.
No.
I'm sorry. I thought you said yeah. Kurds. Because I think the Kurds have been very poorly treated by us. Yeah. Go ahead.
Agreed. So Soleimani runs the Quds forces. Do you expect his behavior is going to change as a result of this deal with Iran?
I think that Iran right now is in the driver's seat to do whatever they want to do.
Let me expand it, because it's not gotcha. I'm trying not to do that, but
well,
I wanted to see
like
if
gotcha.
You...
You're asking me names that, you know, I think it's somewhat ridiculous, but that's okay. Go ahead.
Last question, I want to go back to the beginning, because I really do disagree with you on the gotcha question, think Donald Trump. At the debate, I may bring up Nasrallah being with Hezbollah and al-Julani being with al-Nusra and al-Masri being with Hamas. Do you think if I ask people to talk about those three things and the differences that that's a gotcha question?
Yes, I do. I totally do. I think
that's interesting. I just disagree with it. I kind of
think it's ridiculous. I'm a delegator. I find great people. I find absolutely great people, and I'll find them in our armed services. And I find absolutely great people. And now, in the bigger picture, like the fact that the Kurds are being treated so poorly, and would. Really is the one group that really would be out there fighting for us, I think, and fighting for themselves, maybe more importantly to them. I understand that. But when you start throwing around names of people and where they live and you know, give me their address, I think it's ridiculous, and I think it's...
Well, I wouldn't do that. That's crazy. I agree.
By the way, the names you just mentioned, they probably won't even be there in 6 months or a year.
Yeah, I don't know. Nasrallah's got such staying power. And so
well,
I think
let's see what happens. And you know what? In that case... First day in office or before then, right at the day after the election, I'll know more about it than you will ever know. That I can
tell
you.
I hope so. Last question. So the difference between Hezbollah and Hamas does not matter to you yet, but it will.
It will when it's appropriate. I will know more about it than you know, and believe me, it won't take me long.
A toddler is leading the Republican field. A fucking toddler. Yeah, do you know who he is? Yes. No, you don't. Obviously, you don't. The way he says, like, yes. I will know more about it than you will ever know, ever, if you live like 12 lifetimes or something like that. So there. Oh, Donald, you're so sad. All right, now let me blow your mind a little bit here, because this is actually somewhat nuanced. So on the broader issue, so when you get into the specific names, is it a gotcha question? Kind of, it actually is a little bit. When you get to the specific names of the specific leaders, okay, who's the leader of Hezbollah, who's the leader of the Quds Force, who's the leader of Hamas, definitely when you get to who's the leader of al-Nusra Front, al-Nusra is the al-Qaeda branch fighting in Syria. Nobody knows that fucking guy's name. President Obama probably just barely learned that guy's name recently. So that actually is kind of a gotcha question. The one name you should know, specific name, is al-Baghdadi, of course, the leader of ISIS. But here's where Donald Trump faceplants. It's when he brings up at the end there, he's like, okay, so right now you don't know the difference between Hamas and Hezbollah, but, you know, you're going to learn when you get in office. He says something, you know, to that effect. And Donald Trump goes, yeah, I'll know it when it's appropriate. Okay, see there, you went from, I was somewhat defending him on the specific names of the specific leaders of the groups, but once you get into, I don't know the difference between Hamas and Hezbollah, well now, you know, no way. You shouldn't be anywhere near the office of the president. You shouldn't be running for senator or anything. If you don't know the difference between Hamas and Hezbollah, you have no business whatsoever to be where you are right now. And the sad thing is, I don't think he knows the difference between Hamas and Hezbollah. I don't think maybe the only two on the Republican side that do are Jeb Bush and John Kasich. And I'm pulling that out of my ass. I have no facts to back that up. But just off pure, you know, looking at them, seeing how with it they are, I don't think fucking Chris Christie knows. I don't think Marco Rubio knows. Marco Rubio is as empty a suit as there is. And actually, maybe Carly Fiorina knows the difference. And actually, maybe Huckabee, because he loves Israel so much and he's up their ass so much that he's probably heard from people there when he's in the region about Hamas and Hezbollah. But outside of those guys, you think Rick fucking Perry knows about him? Not an iceberg's chance in hell. Not an iceberg's chance in hell. And understand that this is a big difference between the parties, in my opinion. Now, again, if you ask on the Democratic side, I think it's true that a lot of them they don't know the leader of al-Nusra Front. I don't think they know that. But can they tell you the difference between ISIS, al-Qaeda, Hezbollah, Hamas, al-Nusra, the Quds Force? Absolutely. At any of the Democrats. Hillary Clinton, Martin O'Malley, Bernie Sanders, these guys could give you details of all the different groups. And they could probably tell you who's fighting who and why and who's Sunni and who's Shia, whereas on the Republican side, and definitely with a guy like Donald Trump, dude, not a snowball's chance in hell that he knows that. And it just shows you that they're not, these aren't serious people, man. I mean, I know it sounds hyper-partisan for me to say that, but I'm saying it because it's true. It's not like I have this irrational bias against them, and I'm like, ooh, it's coming out. No, I'm looking at what they fucking say and what they do, and it's so clear that they don't know nearly as much as they should. And that's unacceptable. You can't try to be president. You can't run for president. If you don't know the difference between Hamas and Hezbollah, that's insanity. They don't even know that, and they've proven this time and time again, different Republicans, leading Republicans, whether they're senators or whatever, they don't even know that Iran is Shia, ISIS is fundamentalist Sunni, they're Salafist, and ISIS is fighting Iran and Iran is fighting ISIS. They don't know that. They don't know that. In fact, many Republicans have indicated that they think Iran is working with ISIS or working with Al-Qaeda. Again, Al-Qaeda is Sunni, Iran is Shia. They don't know that. If you don't know that, www.stepasidebitch.com. You're done. Okay. Now we go to Rick Santorum. Dumb and Dumber, these segments. Rick Santorum has a new line of attack that he's using against liberals now. He's mocking diversity.
Again, it's the silly idea and notion, and I remember being at a debate with Howard Dean at Northwestern a couple of years ago, and we were asked a question by a student, what's the greatest virtue of the United States of America? You know what Howard Dean said? Diversity. And this is, but that's
that
what
funny?
They believe. They believe that America will be better off if we bring in people that are nothing like and share none of the values of what made America the unique and great country. And let's be honest, I mean, you know, if you look at radical Islam, it's about as antithetical to the American first principles as anything you'd want to see. But in President Obama's mind, that's a good thing for America because, of course, America is flawed.
Totally made it up. Totally. Yeah, the liberals like diversity. Radical Islam they like. Obama's trying to bring them here. Ha! Ha! What an idiot! Ha! Except he never said that. Point me to one quote, show me one video where President Obama says, I would like to bring in radical Islamists to America. You're not going to find it. You want to know why? He didn't fucking say it. But see, what's so funny about this is, what's Rick Santorum? Rick Santorum is a radical Christian. He's a fundamentalist Christian. He's a guy who wants to get rid of abortion. He's a guy who has said in the past he wants to get rid of birth control. So here's a guy who has a lot in common with radical Islamists, and he's mocking them. He's like, oh, yeah, radical Islamists, they're crazy. Look at these religious fundamentalists. They're so kooky. They don't believe in facts. How about you, Ricky? It's so clear that you're in the same boat as them. You agree more with radical Muslims than you agree with liberals. For sure. For sure. So what's funny is, his beliefs are also antithetical to the American way. Now, I believe in multiculturalism. I believe in diversity. But we should only be we can't be tolerant of intolerance. So in other words, you can have multiculturalism as long as the cultures agree on some very basic things like freedom of speech, freedom of expression, constitutional rights, things of that nature, personal autonomy. And what's clear is radical Islamists do not believe in those things, and radical Christians do not believe in those things. Fundamentalists do not believe in those things. So that, from that perspective, he's actually right about one thing, but he's included in his own criticism. He's right that American culture, open society, freedom, democracy, is not something that can coexist next to radical religion of any sort. But the thing is, he's in that as well. See, the United States is secular, and the United States is a democracy. So it is beautiful when you look around and you see all different races, all different religions, all different belief systems. But those belief systems, you can't have somebody who comes to the U.S. and says, well, now we're going to make this a Christian nation. Now we're going to implement Christian Sharia. Or a radical Muslim that says, now we're going to implement Sharia. Well, then that would be antithetical to the U.S. But that's not what the left is talking about when they're talking about diversity, when they're talking about multiculturalism. Because they've never called for, hey, let's bring in people that will destroy the values we have. How about that? No, they say, let's bring in as many people as we can from all different backgrounds and belief systems, etc., as long as they agree on the basic principles. And, again, the only way that Rick Santorum can muster up an argument against a Democrat or muster up an argument against President Obama is to make something up. So he makes something up, and in the process of it, he doesn't even realize that his argument is also against himself. Because it's true that radical Islam is antithetical to American culture, as is radical Christianity. But he's got a giant blind spot. And in Rick Santorum's mind, let's be clear, when he says radical Islam, what he really means is Islam, and what he really means is all Muslims. Now, that argument is oftentimes made wrongly about people who are not talking about all Muslims, and they're being more specific in their criticism. Oftentimes, that's what happens to atheists when they're being specific, and they're tarred as if they're not. But with a guy like Rick Santorum, make no mistake about it. The bigotry is real. The Islamophobia is real. When he talks about, oh, radical Islam, antithetical to the U.S., what he really means is Muslims, don't let the Muslims in, don't let them anywhere around me. But while he's anti even moderate Muslims and liberal Muslims, what's he doing? He's trying to implement Christian Sharia. So you're a bigger problem, Rick, than any moderate or liberal Muslims would be. Okay. Let me do one more here, and then we'll take a break, skis. Now we go to Rick Perry. Oh, my God, we're going from one dumb person to another dumb person to another dumb person. Fun. We have another classic Rick Perry gaffe for you guys today. His different campaign branches are not only short on cash, some people in some states are now working for free, but then also in some states, he's just packing up shop entirely. He's done in some states. His campaign offices are gone in some states. So he went on Fox News to talk about the state of his campaign, and he said this.
One of the things that I'm most honored about is that so far everybody that's attacked me has gone down the tubes. Yeah, Perry attacked me. Now he's getting out of the race. He was at 4 or 5%. Now he's getting out of the race. He was at 0.
And joining me now, former Texas Governor Rick Perry. Governor, do you want to make news today on The Real Story? Is Donald Trump right? Are you getting out of the race?
You know, a broken clock is right once a day, so.
You didn't just say that. Yes, he did. He said it. A broken clock is right once a day, Rick Perry said. The saying is twice a day, dumbass. But it gets even sadder. He said that, and then he goes on to explain how he's not dropping out of the race. So even if he used the saying right, and he said a broken clock is right twice a day, that's still not the time to say it, because you're staying in the race. So Donald Trump is not right when he says that. No, you know what this is like? This is like that scene in Anchorman when he's like, ha, when in Rome. And she's like, this is not a time to use that. That right, saying doesn't make sense here. He's like, oh, agree to disagree, or whatever the fuck he says. That's what this reminds me of. And Rick Perry has now solidified his legacy. He reminds me of somebody else here. Let's take a look.
Our enemies are innovative and resourceful, and so are we. They never stop thinking about new ways to harm our country and our people, and neither do we. It was not always a given that the United States and America would have a close relationship. These are big achievements for this country, and the people of Bulgaria ought to be proud of the achievements that they have achieved. A fine host for the OPEC summit. I appreciate APEC summit. You know.
God bless America.
Thank you for owing your caution, please.
The fact that they purchased the machine meant somebody had to make the machine. And when somebody makes a machine, it means there's jobs at the machine making place.
I remember meeting a mother of a child who was abducted by the North Koreans. Right here in the Oval Office. These immigrants have helped transform 13 small colonies into a great and growing nation of more than 300 people. People in Louisiana must know that all across our country there's a lot of prayer. Prayer for those whose lives have been turned upside down. And I'm one of them.
Again, I want to thank you all for, and Brownie, you're doing a heck of a job. The FEMA director's working 24.
I said on Friday, you know, this thaw, it took a while to thaw, it's going to take a while to unthaw.
We got an issue in America. Too many good dogs are getting out of business.
It's skipping, but don't worry. The clip is almost over, and we're almost through Bush's immense stupidity. My favorite one is coming up, though. I think all of you know it. It's the single most classic Bushism, I guess is the right thing to call it.
This is where our nation finds hope, where wings take dream.
He's getting the shoes thrown at him right now.
I know the speculation. But I'm the decider, and I decide what is best, and what's best is for Don Rumsfeld to remain as the Secretary of Defense. I hear there's rumors on the internets.
One of the things I've used on the Google is to pull up maps.
I have filters on internets. There's an old saying in Tennessee, I know it's in Texas, probably in Tennessee, that says, fool me once, shame on...
Oh, God.
Shame on you.
Oh, don't do it.
It fooled me. We can't get fooled again.
The over-under on their IQs is like 75. All right, guys, let's take our first break. When we come back, Bobby Jindal caught in some glorious hypocrisy. Stay right there. Ish. All right, we're back. We're back. Let's go to Bobby Jindal. Let's go to Bobby Jindal. So Bobby Jindal was caught in some glorious hypocrisy on the issue of gay marriage and religious freedom. Brian Tashman of Right Wing Watch has a great article about this. So Jindal gave a statement about Kim Davis, who repeatedly refused a marriage license to gays, even though she was mandated to give out that license. And remember, she says, I'm doing this on God's authority. Meanwhile, she's been married 4 times. So God is very selective about who he decides to be a dick against. You know, the thing about, hey, marriage is sacred. Well, she gets a pass, but the gays don't get a pass. So this is what Bobby Jindal said about this case right now with Kim Davis. I don't think anyone should have to choose between following their conscience and religious beliefs and giving up their job and facing financial sanctions. I think it's wrong to force Christian individuals or business owners. We are seeing government today discriminate against whether it's clerks, florists, musicians, or others. I think that's wrong. I think you should be able to keep your job and follow your conscience. I absolutely do believe people have a First Amendment right, a constitutional right. I don't think the court can take that away. So he's coming out throwing haymakers on the side of Kim Davis here. Now, I want you to compare that to what Jindal said when a Louisiana clerk refused an interracial couple a marriage license because of religious beliefs in 2009. Quote, this is a clear violation of constitutional rights and federal and state law. Disciplinary action should be taken immediately, including the revoking of his license. What happened, tough guy? You said with Kim Davis, I don't think anyone should have to choose between following their conscience and religious beliefs and giving up their job. In 09, you said that's exactly what you have to choose between. You believe you're a racist based on the Bible. You're against interracial marriage based on the Bible. You don't want to give out an interracial marriage license. Well, fuck you. You can't do that. But when it's for gays, well, go ahead and discriminate. See, this is, I mean, I was able to sense hypocrisy like this back when I first started following politics, which feels like forever ago. And it struck me that this kind of just blatant, in-your-face, absurd hypocrisy is just so much more common on the right than it is on the left. That's not to say liberals are never hypocrites. Of course that happens from time to time. But by and large, they're more correct and consistent on the issues. This is a complete and utter contradiction. Religious beliefs. You're allowed to discriminate against gays based on religious beliefs. You're allowed to discriminate, period, based on religious beliefs. But when it's interracial, you can't do that. Beliefs are irrelevant. You know what it is? It's that we've been so used to for so long now, the idea that you can't fucking not interracially marry people because you disagree with interracial marriage. That's crazy. We've been so used to that for so long that it's ingrained in us to the point where it does seem crazy if somebody objects. With gays, we're still so used to the discrimination because it's been happening up until just recently. The Supreme Court just allowed gay marriage. They just allowed gay marriage for everybody in the country. So before then, it was not that long ago when it was just normal, so commonplace to say, you're a gay person, you're a second-class citizen, you're not like me, fuck off. So Bobby Jindal, you know what it is? He's a victim of his culture. He falls victim to the same fallacy that so many people across the world fall victim to, which is the idea that I was raised X, therefore X is correct. Bobby Jindal was raised in a culture that said, fuck you to gays, but he was just in that time frame when we started being kind to interracial couples. So that one is grandfathered into his mind. So he's like, well, that one's okay. You can't discriminate for interracial reasons, but the gays, you can discriminate against the gays. No, it's just because you were raised in that culture, you were taught, oh, gay wrong, gay wrong, gay wrong. But interracial couples, you weren't necessarily taught that that's bad, that's bad, that's bad. So you just, you know, you flip-flop based on your own cultural bias. It doesn't take, it's not a very sophisticated level of objectivity to step outside of yourself and look at it with from a blank slate perspective and say logically what makes sense here. But the thing is, people like Bobby Jindal and unfortunately many people on the far right, they're not able to do that basic intellectual exercise, and it's pathetic. Okay, next. If you guys can't tell, I'm going pretty fast today because I got to get in all the stories before 5 o'clock. And we actually might be able to do that. It would be impressive if I could do that. All right, sorry. Let's move along here. A Florida gun manufacturer is facing a lawsuit? No, hold on. Let me check this here. Yeah, my bad. No lawsuit. I like how I just added that to the article. Isn't that genius? A Florida gun manufacturer made an AR-15 with Bible verses on it. Bible verses. So they're calling it the Crusader Rifle, and it's ironically meant to stop, quote, Muslim terrorists. So let's think about this. So you're a Christian, you create a Christian rifle with Bible verses on it, you call it the Crusader Rifle, and you plan on possibly killing people with that rifle, but it's Muslim terrorists. That's the problem. Wouldn't you be acting exactly like them if that's how you responded? Isn't that exactly what a terrorist is? I am religious, I'm going to kill people in the name of my religion. So much so to the point where I put Bible verses on my fucking gun and I call this the Crusader Rifle. Crusader Rifle. But see, he thinks like I'm the polar opposite of Muslim terrorists. You're not the polar opposite of Muslim terrorists. You're the opposite coin of the same coin of bigotry and hatred and intolerance and terrorism and stupidity. They think they're a whole different coin. They think like the Muslim terrorist coin is over here. I'm a good person on a different coin. No, you're this opposite side of the same coin of bigotry and hatred and intolerance. So here's a picture of it. It says Psalm 144:1, Blessed be the Lord, my rock, who trains my hands for war, my fingers for battle. Interesting you picked that Bible verse. I would love for people to troll this guy and make guns that have the peaceful verses on the gun itself or whatever, on the barrel. What is that? That's not the barrel. That's the clip. Yeah, I actually don't know what part of the gun that is. Fail. But you should put imagine peaceful Bible verses on the guns. If it said, you know, whatever, part of the Sermon on the Mount is over there. If it's any of the various things that Jesus said, which was pro immigrant or sojourners, as they call them in the Bible, or any of the anti-rich things about how you should tax the rich, or any of the, I don't know, the idea of turn the other cheek. You want to put that Bible verse on there? You do know that turn the other cheek doesn't just mean, hey, I'm going to turn away from violence and walk away. It's actually even more pacifistic than that. It's if you strike one side of my face, I will present the other cheek and say, hit this side too. So it's like positively against violence in every way, to the point where not even in self-defense can you use violence. That's another thing advocated in the Bible. Now, obviously, the Bible's a wildly contradictory book, but I'll issue a challenge for this guy here. You pick all the parts in the New Testament, since you love Jesus, you pick all the parts in the New Testament that are pro-war and violence. I'll pick all the parts that are pro-peace and hippie-like, and then we'll count it up at the end and see which side is more correct, and whether or not it makes sense for you to put this bullshit thing on your weapon here. So Huffington Post reports on this, quote, Ben Mookie Thomas, hilarious name, a former Navy SEAL and spokesman for Spikes Tactical, told the Orlando Sentinel he wanted a rifle that no devout Muslim would touch. Off the cuff, I said I'd like to have a gun that if a Muslim terrorist picked it up, a bolt of lightning would hit and knock him dead. The gun has three settings, peace, war, and God wills it. God wills it is one of the settings on the gun. What's amazing to me is that these guys think they are the opposite of jihadists. They think they are the moral ones. But guess what? You're a Christian jihadist. If you're creating guns and putting Bible verses on it and saying, I want to kill Muslims with this, that would make you a Christian jihadist, which would mean you're just as bad as they are. So spare me your nonsense about how they're the problem, they're the problem, they're the problem. It's people like you that are the problem. Unfortunately, we have too many people in the world who look at right and wrong and morality through the lens of different groups are right and wrong. So in this guy's mind, Muslims bad, Muslims wrong, Christians good. That's how he views the world. So he's not viewing it through the lens of actions. He's not viewing it through the lens of, well, a radical Muslim is bad, but a moderate Muslim is good. Well, a radical Christian is bad, but a moderate Christian is good. He doesn't look at it like that. Christians good, Muslims bad. That's how he sees it, which allows him to then dehumanize and demonize Muslims and create fucking guns that say dumb shit like this on it. All right. Next. Two Egyptian belly dancers were arrested on Wednesday in a crackdown by the government. The International Business Times reports on this. The women, who have been accused of inciting debauchery, were ordered to be held for at least 4 days for questioning. They were arrested at a nightclub. A preliminary police investigation found the women appeared in immoral videos performing dances full of sexual insinuations. They're facing a year in prison. Wow. So think about this. They didn't even say these women engaged in sex acts on camera. They said immoral videos full of sexual insinuations. So they didn't. It wasn't even like sex. It wasn't nothing like that. They were just like dancing in a salacious way. And they're looking at a year in prison. A year in prison. That's beyond insanity. So last year there was a crackdown as well, and a woman got jail time for a striptease that was on YouTube. It was so tame it was on YouTube. So if they're leaving it up on YouTube and nobody flagged it, it's got to be fairly fucking tame. But they decided, no, we're going to crack down on that too and give you jail time. They even gave the guy who filmed it a year in jail. They tried him in absentia because he fled to Tunisia. But his defense, get his defense, because this is even sadder. He goes, no. We weren't trying to do something sexual here. It wasn't a dance or anything like that. What we were doing was a spoof on Western culture. Yeah, I know. If any Egyptian person has ever been caught, you know, watching belly dancers or looking at strippers or whatever, what they're doing is they're mocking the fact that it's those evil, horny Westerners who enjoy sex and like looking at naked people. That we're not like that. We're good Egyptians. Us, sex? Sex. Sex, stupid. Who cares about sex? We don't care about sex. Yeah, I'm sure. And when people are having sex to make kids, I'm sure you, as you're doing it, you're not actually enjoying it. We're mimicking and mocking the evil Westerners because they enjoy our sex. We fucking hate our sex. How does anybody accept this in the year 2015? How does anybody accept this? No, you're a human fucking being. You know how we got to this point where there's billions of people on the planet? We all fucked. You want to know why? We liked it. It felt really good. We enjoyed it. We like looking at naked bodies. It's what we do. We're human beings. Nothing can be more human. Nothing can be more natural. The genetic drive to want to reproduce. But in so many cultures, in so many societies, everybody's like, no, you can't just stop it. It's evil. It's bad. It's wrong. Why? Nobody ever gave an argument as to why. They just assumed, like, everybody agrees. Like, oh, it's wrong, right? It's bad, right? And a lot of it comes back to religion, let's face it. All religions where they look at a human being as somebody who's defective. There's something wrong with you, and you need to, you know, make up for the fact that you're such a sinner, and you need to live a life that is the opposite of what your natural urges and inclinations are, and that makes you more pure. Fuck that! It's all made up! That's all made up! Now, I'm not saying you should quit your fucking job and do an orgy all day, every day. That would be swinging the pendulum too far in the other direction. But is there a healthy balance somewhere in there where you can enjoy sex, you can look at naked people, so on and so forth? Absolutely. And, of course, even the guy who recorded the video of a woman doing a dance He was found guilty, again, tried in absentia. He's guilty of disrupting morality and inciting debauchery. I'm so against stuff like this, man, I can't even tell you. I'm in favor of flipping the argument completely. So you know what that means? I would say to the people who are enforcing these laws, you know who's disrupting morality? You're disrupting morality, because you know what's immoral? When you throw people in jail for being human beings and having a sexuality, you're the criminal here. You're the problem. You're the immoral ones inciting debauchery. In other words, doing stuff that people enjoy. There it is right there. I've had enough of this. And finally, Sisi is now the leader of Egypt. Now, I don't want to go into the entire history of Egypt in modern times to get into all the nonsense here, but there was a dictator, Mubarak. Mubarak was overthrown. Mohamed Morsi was elected. He's the Muslim Brotherhood leader. He drafted a constitution which was too pro-Islamist, so there was like a second revolution slash coup that happened. They got rid of him, and then Sisi took over. Sisi was the general. Now he's the president slash kind of a dictator in Egypt. And the whole point, I mean, think about it. They said about Morsi, oh, my God, he's too socially conservative. He's an Islamist. That's why we got to get rid of him. But then Sisi gets in there, and he does the same things that Islamists do. Fuck sexuality. We're going to, you know, you're disrupting morality. You're inciting debauchery. What was the point of overthrowing somebody who was an Islamist if you're going to act like an Islamist as well? Yeah, exactly. You have no answer for that. Okay. Now we got our own version of that here in the U.S. You ready? Here we go. Here we go. Cape Cod Regional Tech High School in Massachusetts released a new dress code recently, and they banned yoga pants. They banned yoga pants. So their reasoning, as you probably suspect, is based on social conservatism, I guess you can call it. They want women to cover up and boys not to look. But the idea backfired. Raw Story reports, quote, officials were surprised that male students at Cape Cod Regional Tech showed some solidarity with their female counterparts by showing up in the tight-fitting attire on the first day of school in protest of the clothing restriction that by nature targets female students. So one of the students told CBS News the following, it's pretty much like the same thing that's going on in the Middle East. Women can't drive, specifically in Saudi Arabia, because it's a distraction to men, and I don't think it's fair that we can take something away from the girls just because it's either distracting the guys or it's non-professional. And then another female student pointed out, quote, yoga pants are really comfortable. So school officials have not backed down. The ban is still in place, but they said, well, we're going to allow the protest. So they're not punishing anybody for wearing the yoga pants right now, but I guess in due time they say they will do it. Come on, man. Just get rid of the rule. It's stupid. Now, don't get me wrong. Do I think the boys are biased in their helping of the women? Yes, I do. You want to know why I say that? I was a boy, a high school boy. I was a boy. I am a boy, but I'm a man now, goddammit. I was a high school boy at one time. Pretty much one thing is on your mind when you're a male and you're in high school. So the idea that they're like, oh, yeah, civil rights, bro, feminism, dog. We're on the side of the women. Yep, freedom. Got to let them wear those yoga pants. Got to let them wear it. Are they all on some level like, oh, I just love looking at it? Absolutely. They're doing it for, you know, biased reasons, somewhat perverted reasons. But who cares? I don't care. They're on the right side either way. Because it really is. When it comes down to it, in my opinion, it is a freedom issue. Let them wear whatever the fuck they want to wear. The idea that you're like, the boys might see curves on the girls and then they might like it, and they might actually, like, kiss one another or do something else. Oh, can't have it, can't have it. This is you're, to go back to the last story here from Egypt, you're disrupting morality and inciting debauchery. Now, in Egypt, it was different because they're locking people up for, just locking up belly dancers because they dared to belly dance. That's even crazier. But this is the same kind of thing. Don't wear the pants because you gotta be moral and stuff or something. Fuck off. Let people do whatever they want to do. This isn't over the line. This isn't crazy. And I would stop trying to police the shit that people want to wear. Pretty simple. All right, next. A mom in Tennessee is protesting a public elementary and middle school because seventh graders are being taught about Islam in social studies class. So they're not learning it like, this is a religion and you must believe it. Of course not. They're learning it like, hey, Islam exists. Here are some things about it. Let's move on to the next thing. Can't have it. So her name is Patty Kincaid, or Kincaid. She pulled her fifth grader out of school recently over concerns about Common Core, and she says the following. I'm involved with Tennessee Against Common Core. I want to actively educate people about what Common Core is and some of the parts of Common Core that are most offensive. One of the most offensive parts is the Islam content that is with Common Core. So you ready for this? Raw Story reports the following. She admits that she has not seen the course material on the world's second largest religion. So she's protesting something she doesn't even know what's in it. She doesn't even know what's in it. I heard from somebody who heard from somebody else that somebody in the classroom mentioned Islam. Now I'm protesting. She admitted, but do I know what's actually in the lesson? No. No, I don't know. So how the fuck can you protest? Muslim bad. Islam bad. I told you she's homeschooling her kid. You guys do know that the overwhelming majority of homeschooled kids, they're because their parents are woo-hoo, religious dingbats. So she's like, my radical religion all day long, I'm going to shove it down your throat. Somebody else's, I'm against it, but it's not even that it's radical religion. It's not. And it's not even that they're teaching, hey, here's Islam, believe in it. They're just teaching it from a historical perspective. It's in the social studies class. It's in the social studies class. And get this, I love this made-up part as well. She said that a friend told her from another friend who'd heard it, blah, 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 you know how that goes, the game of telephone, that the kids were told bring towels into school, and then we're going to use the towels and we're going to do Islamic prayers. You really believe that in fucking Tennessee they're doing Muslim prayers in public school? If you believe that, you're just a dumb person. You're not an intelligent person. Honestly, reading stories like this depresses me because it makes me feel like there's no hope. There's no amount of rational conversation. There's not a threshold of number of good points you make that makes sense. Where if she listens to it, she goes, you know what, I've been wrong all along here. My philosophy is incorrect. My belief system is wrong. It's not based on the facts. The chances of this woman changing her mind, 0.000. And that depresses me. That depresses me very much. No, Islam is not taking over schools in Tennessee. No, they're not teaching them to be Muslim. They're teaching it in a social studies class from a historical perspective, probably just glossing over it, but that's still too much for you. And again, the irony is, all the while you're angry about that, you cannot wait to force your Christianity onto everybody else. So you're a hypocrite, along with an idiot. All right, and finally, we'll do one more here, then we'll take our final break and come back, and we'll talk to Professor Gadsad. According to a new study in the Personality and Social Psychology Bulletin, being a nonconformist makes you more attractive. That's interesting. So they report, quote, researchers found that both men and women on dating sites preferred a partner who didn't conform, whether through clothing, life choices, or general opinions. According to Metro, quote, the researchers say this goes to show that the old stereotype of what men like, the submissive girl next door type, just isn't true. They're now urging women to let their freak flag fly. The study's lead author says, quote, I'm intrigued by the notion of the girls' night out and how many women feel as though they can be more unguarded without men around, more relaxed, more crass, more honest, more funny. And I keep thinking, why are you keeping this good stuff to yourselves? Men would love it. So my takeaway from this report is very simple. It just shows me that life after high school is not like life in high school. The whole idea when you're in high school is like, ooh, everybody's got to try to be popular. Everybody's got to fit that mold. Everybody's got to play a role. And you either do or you don't. And, you know, your social point level is based on that. When you get out of high school, when you become an adult, it's really the opposite. Nobody wants to see somebody, you know, vanilla, conforming, you know, taking other people's opinions and pawning them off as their own. They want to look at somebody and go, okay, that's an individual. You know, that's a person who likes the Wu-Tang Clan, but also watches The Odd Couple, whatever. People like that. They say, okay, so there's these are this person's different interests, this is their political beliefs, this is how they spend their time, this is their hobbies, whatever. And the more unique you are, the apparently the more likely you are to get laid. So 3, 2, 1, well, you guys go and become weirder than you are. Okay, so let's take a break. When we come back, Professor Gad Saad and I will have a very interesting conversation about a variety of different topics. All right, stay right there. Welcome back to the show, guys. I'm very excited to welcome to the show now Professor Gad Saad. He's an evolutionary behavioral scientist at the John Molson School of Business at Concordia University. Some of his notable works are The Evolutionary Bases of Consumption, The Consuming Instinct, and Evolutionary Psychology in the Business Sciences. You guys can find him on YouTube. His channel is just G-A-D-S-A-A-D, Gad Saad, his name, and you could follow him on Twitter. It's at Gad Saad. Professor, thanks so much for joining me. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for having me. Great to be with you.
So I think a lot of people in my audience are familiar with you, and they're familiar with your work. You've been on Joe Rogan's podcast a number of times. You did an interview with Dave Rubin recently, who, of course, I know through TYT. And I think there's – you and I have plenty of areas of agreement. We have some areas of disagreement, too, but I think I'd rather like to focus on the agreement today because I want to pick your brain and see what I can learn. So first of all, let's have a little question, a little conversation here about political correctness. My general thesis on it, and I'm curious to see if you agree with me on this, I've been saying for a long time, I don't know if I've ever heard an argument from the left about political correctness that I didn't agree with. So in other words, like when Bill Maher gets angry at the left for joke outrage, for example, I think that's 100% merited, and it annoys me that people on the left sometimes become the PC police. But at the same time, when I see people on the right typically bring up the idea of political correctness, I cringe because, you know, for example, like Ann Coulter brought it up recently while discussing Donald Trump, and I feel like the right uses it as a mask to get away with saying things that are factually incorrect, whereas the left has legitimate concerns about political correctness. What do you think?
Well, I mean, I think you're right. The problem is that in its spirit, political correctness is a nice thing to the extent that, you know, we should all be kind to each other. We should use language that doesn't hurt one another. The problem arises where, and I regret to say that this is very much a left's problem, where it becomes a runaway form of lunacy, right, where every single possible word could be redefined in a way that it becomes offensive, right? So, for example, the language police, a part of the political correctness movement, constantly redefines words so that what used to be perfectly acceptable becomes unacceptable. And given the number of problems that we have to address in the world, I think that it's maybe misplaced energy to worry about all these things.
Yeah. My go-to on that is always, I always bring this up as my like main point whenever I discuss political correctness. It really is the joke outrage gets me, man. I get so angry about that because I feel like the left alienates people and loses people who agree with them when you get people that get super upset over jokes that, you know, offend certain groups of people. Just to give you one example, Bill Maher used to have this joke where he spoke about how he doesn't want President Obama to be President Wayne Brady. He wants President Obama to be President Suge Knight and wear, like, a purple suit and smoke a Black and Mild. And the idea is he wants a more aggressive, liberal president. And, you know, some people get angry about that. Or when he made the joke comparing the look of somebody in One Direction to one of the Zarnev brothers, it's like he's not actually saying – people
right.
tried to pretend like he was saying all Muslims are terrorists when he made that joke. But that's not
right.
what he was saying. He was just making a joke because they look alike.
Well, I think in what happens in comedy is you take certain stereotypes that oftentimes are rooted in truth. Some of these stereotypes describe a particular group. It might be men or women or Asians or blacks or whites. And you if you'd like, you expand the stereotype so that it becomes humorous. And the problem arises where you have identity politics that so much define the discourse on campuses. Well, to the extent that you appear as though you're making fun of a group, then it becomes forbidden. And I think that's really where it comes from, right? It's the clash of humor with identity politics that doesn't really fly.
What do you think is the best way to fight back against that? Because so you and I have both spoken to Sargon of Akkad, who has another great YouTube
yes.
channel. And my initial argument to him was, well, I would argue that what they're doing is actually at its core not liberal. Like that, there's more in common with, you know, old school puritanical thinking. Like that's what they're doing. It's actually more in line with authoritarian thought. And authoritarianism, at least, you know, according to one political spectrum, is almost by definition right-wing. So isn't it like isn't that the way for people like myself and you to try to win that argument, is to convince these people on college campuses and elsewhere that, like, in fact, you're not really being liberal. You think you're being liberal, but to be liberal means, for example, you always defend free speech, even if it's something that could be a grotesque comment.
You're absolutely right. It is very much a fascist position to take. Now, how do you handle it? I mean, one of the ways that I handle it, for those who follow me, they already know this, is I apply a lot of satire, right? I actually use humor to demonstrate how idiotic it is, right? So today, just today, I put up a bunch of tweets where I feigned being offended at the fact that somebody called me sir without first polling what my gender identity is. And then I also feigned being outraged at the fact that somebody assumed that in our married life, I was the husband and my wife was the wife, again, without polling, right? So and a lot of people say, well, how do you get away with all this stuff? Well, I get away with it because I'm speaking the truth, right? It is so remarkably idiotic that by satirizing it, you demonstrate, you know, how silly it is. And so that's, I think, a very powerful way to fight back against this lunacy. Simply satirize it, make fun of it, humiliate it, so that hopefully eventually it goes away and it's only a bleep in history.
I have to say, Professor, I'm admittedly, and this is kind of the criticism I got from Sargon's audience too, is like, they say I'm really naive to this stuff. So, I spend all my day, like, day in, day out, all I do is read articles from, you know, reputable websites. So, like, I'm knee-deep in economic policy and foreign policy and stuff, and I'm not in touch with, like, what's going on college campuses right now. And people said you're naive to how extreme it's gotten. Like, Joe Rogan tweeted something at you recently saying that you'd like it, and I clicked the link, and I read, is that real? Like, I can't believe that's real. And for people who don't know what we're talking about, it's gender identities and, like, how you're supposed to refer to people. Like, isn't there something for gender neutral? Instead of he or she, you're supposed to say Z or something like that?
Exactly right. Well, look, I mean, it's not that every single person on college campuses is going around worried about these issues. But the reality is that the small minority of folks who are very politically engaged are the ones who end up making the most noise on campus, right? So while perhaps 95% of the students go about their days, you know, worrying about taking differential equations and, you know, biological psychology and all sorts of other fun courses, there's a small, highly engaged group of students, activists, who end up sort of perhaps wrongly swaying the public discourse. So no, it's not the case that everybody is walking around changing the manner in which we address one another in terms of gender pronouns, but they certainly, have a majority of the loud voices on campuses. And again, the way you address that is by confronting them. So a few years ago, I accepted an invitation to go speak at Wellesley College, which, as you may or may not know, you know, is a hotbed of this type of political correctness. And I went there to speak specifically about the thought police, knowing that perhaps, you know, I might be walking into the viper's den. But it was important for me to do that because you need to challenge those students so that they don't feel too complacent with their BS.
Yeah, part of me, I think that you're right, that, like, it's a very vocal minority of students. But what annoys me is that it's like they're know-nothings. So, for example, like, take the Bernie Sanders speech recently where he was interrupted by Black Lives Matter protesters. Like, that's so extreme that Black Lives Matter came out and said, no, we denounce these people, we disagree with these people. Apparently there's some people out there who look at Bernie Sanders and they think he's the enemy, when it comes to policies for minority communities. Like, if that's your position, you just don't know enough. Like, you're not educated on what these people stand for. And I think that's what bothers me about it.
Right, and I think, again, there are tons of really important issues. So if we take, for example, feminism, there are a million issues that people, men and women, could weigh in on to try to improve the plight of women around the world. We can all agree about that. The problem comes, we all have a fixed amount, you know, we have a fixed pie of time and energy where we could dedicate to a particular cause, and then it becomes important for us to, you know, make a judicious decision as to which issue we'd like to tackle. So tackling, you know, female genital mutilation that, you know, afflicts women around the world is a very important issue. Trying to analyze the, quote, sexist depictions of female heroines in games might not be top on the queue. So again, it arises from a broken moral compass. It arises from, I think, something that we're also supposed to talk about, moral and cultural relativism, where
right.
a lot of Western feminists are afraid to criticize the practices of the other, lest they might be viewed as bigoted and racist. And again, so these are real issues that have real consequences to real people, right? So rather than, you know, Anita Sarkeesian, I hate the fact that I know her name, rather than, you know, worrying about doing, you know, endless idiotic content analyses about, you know, heroines in games, why don't you address real issues, right? So when Ayaan Hirsi Ali tries to go to Brandeis to give a speech, because I think she was receiving an honorary degree, and then they stop her from going there, then we know that the moral compass of many, you know, Western feminists is broken, right?
Yeah. So to get to that issue, the issue of cultural relativism and moral relativism. So I haven't been accused from that group often, but like recently I did a video where, or I did a segment on the women sentenced to gang rape by a tribe in rural India. And in the midst of that conversation and that segment, I had mentioned that what I think is obviously true, which is that some cultures have practices that are just flat out incorrect. Like, that's just wrong. You're not supposed to,
right.
you know, sentenced somebody to gang rape, and somebody had reached out to me on Twitter and called me racist over that. Like, oh, you're racist because you dared to say that, you know, not all cultures are equal. And, like, on the one hand, I get what they're afraid of. They're afraid of this idea that people can hide behind the idea of, oh, we mean well, and then we get away with doing fucked up shit. But at the same
right.
time, like, to when you go that far to the point where I'm criticizing something very specific, women sentenced to gang rape, if you're objecting over that and you're disagreeing that there's differences between cultural practices, that does become cultural relativism or moral relativism.
Absolutely. So I'll say this. I think this breakdown of reasoning stems from two somewhat related movements. One, postmodernism, which took hold in many, in all universities, the idea being that there are no objective truths. Everything is relative, right? And this is why postmodernism is known as an anti-science movement, because by definition, science tries to uncover realities of nature. Now, if you start with the premise that there are no objective truths, then you're putting yourself in a corner. So that's number one. Number two, multiculturalism as a political philosophy argues that when you accept new immigrants into your country, you should never try to get them to assimilate. If they wish to maintain the practices from wherever they came from, then you should encourage them to do that. Now, that's fine. I mean, I'm Lebanese, and I moved to Canada, and I still speak Arabic, of course, and I love Lebanese food, and much of my ethnicity is Arabic. But some of the ugly stuff that I left behind in the Middle East, I don't wish to replicate in Canada. And I should be judged harshly by Canadians if I wish to replicate those. So I think that's where originally this idea of who are we to judge the other come from. Now, I'll just say, just to add to your example about the gang rape, Sam Harris tells a great story, and I might get a few of the details wrong. At one point, he was at some function where there was a lady, an ethicist, who served on the presidential ethics board, whatever exactly that is. And she was very much a moral relativist. And he wanted to push to see how far he could push her. So he asked her, do you think if there were a practice whereby every third child, his eyes would have to be gouged because of some, you know, religious narrative, would that be okay by you? And her answer was, and, you know, you need to be sitting down to believe this, was, yes, of course, I mean, who are we to judge their practices? So this ethicist who serves on the president's, you know, panel was unable to feel sufficiently morally comfortable in saying that the gouging of the eyes of children was a reprehensible reality. That's pretty bad.
Yeah, see, to me, like, so broadly speaking, the idea of multiculturalism, I'm totally in favor of. But there's a very important caveat in there, which is that you can't be tolerant of intolerance. So if you have some sort of fundamentalist Christian sect pop up or fundamentalist Islamic sect pop up and they want to be part of this multicultural environment, well, you can't allow that if they don't agree on the basics. So as long as people agree on the basics, well, then, yeah, I'm in favor of as many races as we can possibly get in here, let's get them in here. As many ethnicities as possible, let's get them in here. As many religions as possible, let's get them in here. But you all need to agree on the basics, which is that you can only be tolerant of other cultures that are tolerant. You can't be tolerant of intolerance, because then it's self-destructive, and then the intolerant end up taking over, and you have to cower
exactly
in the corner and say, okay, I need to acquiesce to these intolerant ones because they're the loudest, and who am I to judge? The who am I to judge thing, you know, it's weird because there's like, so there's one rule that I generally agree with, and I'm curious what you think about it, and it's the idea that, like, I think we, or myself as an American, I should criticize what Americans do wrong first and what our government does wrong first. But I'm not limiting myself in principle to only critiquing America. Of course I'm going to critique other cultures. But I do believe in the idea that, okay, well, let's prioritize here and let's start with what we can control here in America over elsewhere first. Do you agree with that principle, or would you say it makes more
sense
to just judge, you know, the worst practices regardless of where they are and don't worry about starting with your own?
Right. So when it comes to, if you like, our innate moral compass, then that moral compass is not restricted by geographic boundaries, right? So I do believe that there is such a thing as deontological ethics. There is right, there is wrong. The gouging of children, even of the children's eyes, even if couched under the cloak of religion, is wrong. And so if I am a citizen of the world who is making pronouncements about, you know, proper moral conduct, then I don't care so much whether the moral transgression is happening from my government or from somewhere over there, right? I think the problem with a lot of progressives is that they, you know, self-flagellate by demonstrating their progressive membership card by always turning the critical eye towards them, right? So the way that I demonstrate that I'm a truly progressive person is to constantly criticize my culture, you know, my identity,
right, yeah,
my values. That's the way I am a true progressive, right? It's the Noam Chomsky phenomenon, right? Which, as you may or may not know, I coined the game the 6 degrees of Noam Chomsky thinking, which basically works as follows. For any calamity around the world, you need to link it to the U.S. military-industrial complex in 6 causal steps or fewer, right? The idea being that everything somehow boils down to the U.S. evil empire. Or you could choose your other preferred villain. It could be Israel,
right.
It could be someone else, but it's certainly not those brown people over there. And that's just hypocrisy. It's intellectually dishonest, and I frankly can't stand it.
Yeah, I see. I don't – I mean, I think you're obviously right when you say it's a problem when people basically out of principle say, I'm only going to criticize the U.S., I'm only going to criticize myself, and I will relentlessly link everything back to us. I think that's a problem because I think that's not true. If you're always doing that, then you're just incorrect and you're not accurately diagnosing stuff. But I think you and I do have a slight disagreement in the sense that I would say because I am an American and because I can affect American policy and American culture more, I'm much more likely criticize us. And then, of course, I'm not against, in principle, criticizing other countries, other religions. I criticize everybody. But I just think that, you know, there's not that there's necessarily a moral responsibility to first try to fix what you can change, but just that I think it makes it so that when you criticize others, they realize, oh, it's coming from a good place because they're willing to be self-critical as well.
Right, right. Incidentally, yesterday I had a Twitter exchange with a gentleman who will go nameless that very much related to exactly what we were talking about. At one point I had put up a fact about the ridiculously low number of refugees that have been taken in by the Gulf states. I think, if anything, I think the number is zero. And this
person...
Yeah,
many it is zero, yeah.
Right, and this person retorted, I hadn't tagged him on my Twitter feed, but he retorted, why don't we look at ourselves and how much we should take in rather than worry about the Gulf states. Oh, by the way, how many did Israel take in, right? So, I mean, imagine how grotesque this type of thinking is, right? I mean, who is best positioned to effect change regarding the tragedy that the Syrian refugees are facing? Their neighbors, their co-religionists, or Hungary and Bosnia-Herzegovina, right? So the idea that, now, again, the reason why he was simply unwilling to criticize the Gulf states, because somehow within his progressive moral compass, it's just wrong to do that. It is progressive to criticize Canada or U.S. for not doing more, but it is absolutely wrong to criticize the Gulf states for doing nothing. That's a broken moral compass.
All right, so we have about 9 minutes left here, and I want to get to an interesting story I want to tell you about feminism and get your response, or third wave feminism,
sure.
I should say. So I promised everybody that I would say the word titties in front of you because you're a professor, so I will now proceed to use the word titties.
Right,
so
fair enough.
So I did a segment recently about, I think it was in New Hampshire or something, they were doing this Free the Nipple protest, and I said in the segment, I have no problem. So if they want to walk around and show their tits, whatever, I'm a straight guy, I'm biased in favor of seeing them, I want to see your tits. So go ahead, show me your tits. It's fine. So they can do that protest. But I got some shit from people where they argued like, no, you don't understand the reason why you like tits is because, like, you know, you were socially conditioned to do it.
Right.
My response was like, no. First of all, the reason I like wide hips on a woman, the reason I like a big ass on a woman is because, you know, scientists have found that means they have childbearing hips. So it's very
innate. I'm one of those scientists.
Right, which is awesome. It's very innate. It's very biological. It makes there's an urge there that, you know, somebody like myself has where it's not created by society. It's just there. And then a response I got from somebody was, well, you know, you're kind of using the same logic that's used that fundamentalist Muslims use to cover up women. And that did give me pause for a second because I was like, wait, am I using that reasoning? You know, when they say, oh, they can't show their anything because, God forbid, a man gets turned on.
Right. So I'll address two things here. First, let me address the Muslim issue that you just mentioned. I wrote an article, and then I've also posted a YouTube clip where I referred to a comparison between the bikini and the burqa or the niqab, and the idea being that Western feminists, when they weigh in on this issue, actually argue that the bikini is a patriarchal tool of oppression because it promotes the male gaze, while the burqa / niqab is liberating because it averts the male gaze. Now, that's an absolute fact. I could point you to many feminists who actually argue that. But now let's come back to the issue of innate mating preferences. This idea stems from the notion that we are born with empty minds and that it's only socialization that teach us to be who we are, even including our sexuality. So the fact that I am attracted to my wife is only because of the vagaries of having watched Hollywood movies. Had Hollywood movies taught me to prefer mating with watermelons or trees, then of course I would have been malleable enough to prefer that. It is some of the most astonishingly moronic discourse that humans have ever come up with. By definition, humans are a sexually reproducing, sexually dimorphic species. Sexually dimorphic means that we have innate sex differences. This is how we define our species in biology. So it would make perfect sense that both men and women would have evolved mating preferences that confer reproductive advantage to each sex. So, for example, if you show women different male body types, they don't prefer men who have a pear-shaped body, who have a nasal voice, who are beta submissive males, right? They don't prefer that. If you find a culture where women prefer that, then I'll make you very famous. It doesn't exist. So the idea that Kyle is only attracted to women that have protruding behinds because he saw a Jennifer Lopez video is laughable, right? I mean, as a matter of fact, I don't know if do we have enough time for me to give you some of the evidence regarding innate mating preferences when it comes to women's shapes?
We have four minutes.
All right, four minutes.
Knock yourself out.
All right. So, for example, if you go to different cultures, very, very different cultures, and show men in those cultures women of different waist to hip ratio, ratios, they prefer the one that's 0.7, which is the hourglass figure. Women who have a 0.7 ratio are healthier and are more likely to conceive. We know that from medical studies, epidemiological studies. If you look at art statues spanning several millennia from ancient Greece, from Africa, from Egypt, from India, and you do a content analysis of the statues, they tend to be around 0.7. If you take congenitally blind men, these are men who have never had the gift of sight, and you make them tactily, right, haptically, with their hands, touch different mannequins with different waist-to-hip ratios, they prefer the one that has 0.7. I did a study where I looked at waist-to-hip ratio of online escorts, so these are female sex workers, across 48 different countries, radically different countries. The average waist-to-hip ratio, I think, was 0.72. So the amount of empirical evidence that exists from widely different fields to point to 0.7 is incontestable. But yet you have idiots saying, no, it's due to Hollywood images. Again, it's because it's a hopeful message, right? It basically argues that everything that we are is just due to the vagaries of socialization. It's wrong, and it needs to be defeated.
Right. I agree completely on that. But quick question, though, just broader. We had probably 2 minutes and 30 seconds here.
Sure.
On the issue, more broadly speaking, and I know this is hard to answer so quickly, but the idea of nature versus nurture, I've always been one of those guys where when you look at the total picture, I think a lot of things are a mix. Would you agree with that, or do you think it's almost all nature?
No, you're exactly right. And as a matter of fact, I like to use what's known as the cake metaphor. So if you take the ingredients of a cake, right, the flour, the eggs, the sugar, and then at first you could see that they're separate ingredients, but now you put them together and then you bake the cake. If now once I ask you to look at the cake and point to the separate ingredients, you can't, right? It's an inextricable mix of all those ingredients.
Right.
That's what we are. The idea of nature versus nurture is really a moot, idiotic dichotomy. Almost everything is an inextricable mix of both.
That's a great answer. That's exactly you. And I've never heard that cake analogy is perfect. All right, guys.
That's why I'm the godfather.
That's right. All right, so everybody can follow Professor Gad Saad on Twitter. It's at GADSAAD. And you can check out his YouTube channel. That's youtube.com/GADSAAD. And Professor Saad, do you have any other outlets that you want them to check out on?
They could also, if they'd like, follow me on Facebook. It's Dr.Gad.SAAD.
All right, Professor. Thanks so much for joining me. I really appreciate it. It was a fun conversation.
Thank you so much, sir. Good talking to you.
All right. Take care.
Take care. Bye, Kyle.
All right, guys. That'll do the show, and have a great weekend. I'm not sure yet if we're doing a show on Monday because I'm going on vacation the week after next week. So maybe I do Monday, maybe I don't. I might need to prep some stuff to be uploaded for the week I'm off. But play it by ear. I'll release it on Facebook and I'll release it on Twitter as to whether or not we have a show Monday for Labor Day. All right, guys, have a great weekend. Mwah. Kisses. Later.